A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 129. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Pathfinders in Space. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Pathfinders in Space was a classic black and white children's space science fiction TV series. It was on ITV starting in 1960.
That's right, yes. Black and white, as you say, children's TV. And it was obviously popular, as we'll discuss in a moment, because it got two sequel series, which were called Pathfinders to Mars and then Pathfinders to Venus. And they came out quite soon afterwards, 1960 and 1961. And we are going to talk about those as well as we get into it here, Brian.
Yes, that's right. There were a total of 21 episodes from these three different serials, 25 minutes per episode, that ran entirely in 1960 and 61. And they really reflect the time and the media and the television that was being done at that stage in the very early 60s.
Yes, I mean, it's early television. It's developing. It's moving into the 60s. And one of the things we'll be talking about as we go along is whether this show was yet again another one of the forerunners that led to Doctor Who. And there are some connections which we'll discuss as we get into it.
That's right. Now, getting into the setup of this show, the story actually begins in an earlier serial, which was even before Pathfinders, and we won't be talking about that quite as much because that one is no longer available. It's missing.
That's it. That's Target Luna, which came out in April 1960. We'll talk about the story of that a bit more in a moment, but basically the young son of a space scientist somehow manages to find himself on board a rocket ship as he secretly replaces the pilot and finds himself blast into space. We don't know too much about it because, as you say, Brian, the show doesn't survive, although we do have the script. We do know that it was very popular in 1960 for ABC television. That's one of the ITV networks. So popular that we quickly got a sequel.
That's right. And this was very much in the style of the time that they were quickly putting things together and broadcasting them. So Pathfinders to Space was the next serial after Target Luna. And in it we have Professor Wedgwood leading this British rocket team. He is working at this closely guarded launch site on Buchan Island. And his three children are coming there to visit him. And they are joined by a science reporter, and Wedgwood and his colleagues are setting off to the moon in this rocket known as Moon Rocket 1, or MR-1. And they take off, and they are supposed to be followed by an automated ship with all of their supplies, which is MR-2, Moon Rocket 2. And Moon Rocket 2 is supposed to launch and run as this automated ship with no crew on it, but the automated systems don't all work, so they decide very quickly that they need to have a crew on MR-2.
And, of course, who else is going to make up the crew but his Professor Wedgwood's three children and this science reporter who's going to sort of take over as the main pilot for MR-2. And they're going to form a rather unlikely rescue team and try and sort of meet up with Professor Wedgwood and his team of scientists in MR-1. And then, of course, along the way, they are actually going to reach the moon. And when they get there, Brian, there's going to be a rather surprise discovery, shall we say, a dramatic discovery.
Yes, absolutely. So getting into the characters, we've already mentioned Professor Wedgwood, played by Peter Williams. And he was a bit like a Quatermass type figure, if you're familiar with the 1950s Quatermass series. But he is the professor, he is very knowledgeable and something of a moral authority, but definitely a character who is intellectual and discovering what is out there and analyzing what they find when they go to the moon. And of course, we have his three children as well, as we mentioned, Jeffrey, Valerie, and the youngest, Jimmy. And they were played by Stuart Godini, Gillian Ferguson, and Richard Dean.
Okay, then we have this science reporter that we've mentioned, a chap called Conway Henderson. He has a background in the Royal Air Force during World War II, so he is already a pilot and somewhat of a radio expert, and he's moved into science reporting and is at this remote Buchan Island base to sort of cover the moon rocket launch. But of course, he will get involved. And he was played by the actor Gerald Flood, and Gerald Flood will be familiar to Doctor Who fans because he turned up later on as King John in the fifth Doctor serial, The King's Demons, I think is right, Brian.
Yes, that's right, in the 1980s.
And would, of course, from that serial go on as well to provide the voice of the robot Chameleon, who became one of the Doctor's companions. So quite a connection with Doctor Who later on in the 80s.
Yes, that's right. So this is a show from a much earlier time in 1960, 61, and then 20-odd years later, he shows up in Doctor Who. So kind of interesting.
Yeah. And Gerald Flood, you know, he's got leading man looks at the time, and he's quite charismatic. And whereas Professor Wedgwood is a little bit academic and aloof, he seems to be a more approachable character. And of course, as the series progresses, his character of Henderson will become more and more central, I think, as he sort of takes over the sort of the main leading man part.
Yes, he definitely is a central character who stays in that sort of central role throughout the three serials we're looking at. We also had Jean Carey, played by Irene Sutcliffe, and she was a scientist in the mission control room who, in that initial Pathfinders in Space serial, she helps to explain a lot of things to reporters and, of course, to us as well. And then we can't go without mentioning the character of Hamlet, who was a guinea pig. I'm not sure the name of the guinea pig who played Hamlet. But yes, the youngest of Professor Wedgwood's children, Jimmy, carried this little guinea pig with them everywhere, including into space. So we get constant references from Jimmy and other characters to Hamlet the guinea pig and his safety and so on.
Yes, that's right. The constant character of Hamlet will be sticking with us through these three serials in rather a sort of odd children's television way. As you say, Brian, the Wedgwood children never go anywhere without him.
Yes, if you have any question about whether you're watching an old-style children's show, well, that should give you the answer. You certainly are.
Rule, isn't he?
You know about it, then?
Of course he doesn't know. He's only guessing.
That's right. And my guess is your father's going to take a group of people in a spaceship around the moon, leaving Buchan Island this evening. Right?
No, wrong.
Oh, well, never mind. I hope to try again. How long's he away for?
We're not allowed to tell you where he's going, but he'll be away almost 3 weeks.
Uh-huh. Well, that's 2 days to get there, 2 days to get back, 14 days in between. That's half a lunar day, the longest time a man can stay in any one place on the moon's surface. You don't mean to tell me that your father's going to land on the moon?
I haven't told you anything yet, Mr. Henderson.
Nobody's guessed.
To land on the moon itself. Something men have dreamed of for centuries.
What do you think they'll find up there, Mr. Henderson?
The stepping stone to the stars.
Yes, but what's it going to be like up there?
Oh, mountains higher than anything we've seen on Earth. Arid deserts of dust. Deep chasms. And absolute silence. And craters. Vast craters up to 150 miles across. You know, your father will probably find out what caused those craters. And he'll also probably find out where the moon came from.
Well, where did it come from?
Well, here's one theory. Come over here. Now, many scientists.
So, getting into some of our production notes, Sidney Newman was a well-known TV producer in Canada. He was from Canada and worked on the CBC. and at a certain point in the 50s came over to work as a TV producer in the UK. And he was recruited by ABC, you know, one of these early ITV networks, as the senior drama producer in 1957. So even back in 57, he was working as a producer on UK television.
Yeah, that's right. Sidney Newman must have been very good at his job indeed, because throughout his career, he seems to have been sort of poached and recruited by bigger and bigger networks, Brian, it seems. He was obviously much in demand, I think, at the time.
Yes, absolutely. He was a good sort of organizer and, I guess, sort of committee chair. There were quite a few shows that were sort of put together and designed by a group of several people, and he would often be the person organizing that and getting it to go ahead. He famously created the Avengers as really mainly just the head of the committee doing that, but he is credited for creating the Avengers in 1961, and of course credited for creating Doctor Who, which I think he had a larger hands-on role in that.
Okay, so here we have him back in the late 1950s in ABC television, and he is working to separate the role of producer and director. Previously, when we discussed 1950s shows like Quatermass and the Nigel Neal 1984, we had the role of the producer and director was always usually the same person. So here's Sidney Newman actually carving those two roles apart. And as you say, Brian, he was creating some quite well-known shows. There was Armchair Theatre was one of his shows, and there was a science fiction show called Out of This World, which would sort of go on to become or influence a later show called Out of the Unknown, which we may well be discussing at some point in the future on British Invaders. So he's involved in big shows, and here he is really sort of, I think, making his mark on ITV television.
Yes, that's right. And what he was looking to do was something sort of interesting, because he wanted high-quality children's shows. I think this was a definite interest of his. The types of children's shows that were being done in the 1950s on television were pretty basic. And he was looking at the success of Quatermass on the BBC, which was successful over several years in the 50s, and very much was an adult science fiction show, and pushed the boundaries of what you can do for television drama and television science fiction. It really pushed it ahead on the BBC. And he was looking for something that would have some of that quality of being a more interesting and better quality, more complex type of show, but something that would be that and also be a show for children. And this is, at the time, I'm sure, was a very tricky balance to strike. And in trying to do this, he commissioned Malcolm Hulk, who later wrote for Doctor Who quite a bit, Malcolm Hulk and Eric Pace to write a 6-part serial set in space with children in the leading roles. And of course, Hulk and Pace were also known for a TV play called This Day in Fear, which starred a young Patrick McGoohan.
All right, another little connection there. So yes, we've got Hulk and Pace, who are going to be with us as the writers throughout all these serials. And in 1960, in April 1960, there's this show, Target Luna, the one we've been mentioning, the one that does not survive. And as you've said, Sidney Newman, very keen to have some real science in this show and have the series explain real science to its young audience. So again, we have the character of Professor Wedgwood, who is introduced in this serial with his three children visiting him at Buchan Island for the very first time. And here we have the pilot of the moon rocket becoming suddenly unwell and the youngest Wedgwood child, Jimmy, secretly taking his place and finding himself basically blasted into space. Now, pretty much all the characters from Target Luna, I think, were recast. So it's not the same actors. And interestingly, another little connection, one of the Wedgwood children was played by a young actor called Michael Craze, who would later go on to play the companion Ben for both the first and second Doctors in Doctor Who.
Yes, it would have been interesting to see Michael Kreis playing Geoffrey Wedgwood. That's missing, so we don't get the chance. But yeah, interesting to see that connection there. The show, Target Luna, was basically immediately a success. And Hulk and Pace quickly set to work on the scripts for what initially was Target Luna Series 2, but quickly became Pathfinders in Space. And it was only 5 months later that it was actually broadcast.
Yeah, the quick turnaround time they had there, Brian. I mean, we'll see that as we talk about these other serials. They could turn these out fairly quickly at the time. And as we've said, much of the cast changes, including Hamlet, the guinea pig, or I think they sometimes do refer to him as Hamlet the hamster, but he is a guinea pig, as you say. But yeah, the cast change, and we have a new director on board. We have Guy Verney, who would go on to direct all three of these serials we've been watching. And he would later also go on to direct The Avengers, and he directed an episode of the Out of This World series called Little Robot Lost, which was obviously based on the Isaac Asimov story. And we've got the crew building sets for the various rockets, and we've got a moonscape, of course, as well. And lots of this stuff being put together fairly quickly, but not looking too bad, Brian.
Yes, some of the moonscape actually was pretty good, I thought. They had the actors wearing spacesuits, of course, and they actually had to rework how they did the helmets, because initially they had these helmets with glass visors, but the cameras they were using at the time didn't deal that well with them, and they found that they just couldn't record the actors' voices through these things. So they ended up with the helmets with no glass on them.
Yeah, that's right. They put two crosswires across the front of the helmet to sort of give us the idea that there is glass there. But unfortunately, with the standard of recording we've been watching, it's quite clear that there isn't any glass in front of the actors' faces. And in fact, at various moments, you can see bits of hair sticking out through these helmets and so on. So it's slightly charming in a way.
I suspect it was harder to see some of those flaws on the original broadcasts with the types of televisions that existed at the time.
I think absolutely right. I think they probably got away with a lot more than they can now.
They filmed a number of spacewalk sequences on sets that were actually covered with black velvet, with actors hanging and spinning from ropes and on turntables and using sort of odd camera angles and things like that, which had sort of an interesting effect. It worked fairly well in some cases.
Yeah, they did a good job with that. They also, and again, this may be Sidney Newman's influence, they also brought quite cinematic editing to this show, in that they would cut quickly from one scene to another and not have the sort of like long takes we were used to previously with live television. We've got the actors, they are being recorded on videotape, but they are being recorded almost as if it's live, because the videotape was obviously so expensive. If there were fluffed lines and errors, they're pretty much left in on the recording. So again, some of that charm comes through as we watch it now, in that there are some flubbed lines and gaffes here and there that make it through to the recordings.
Yes, at the time, editing was very limited in what they could do with videotape. It was not easy to record something on video and then slice out the bits you wanted and use the takes that you did want and that sort of thing. You could do that on film at the time by, you know, cutting the film and splicing it together, but they really didn't have much of that for videotape, so you would generally have a series of fixed points that they could go back and cut out and re-record a whole section. But those sections would be fairly long, so the ability to redo things was quite limited. And the quick cuts and things usually would just be switching from one camera to another while the actors and everything is continuing to happen. So you don't have a great deal of flexibility with that, but they were able to give you sort of the illusion of the faster scene switches and things by cutting from one camera to another.
Okay, interesting stuff. So this first serial, 7 episodes, about 25 minutes each, and a first broadcast September 1960. And again, must have been very successful, because quite quickly, followed by Pathfinders to Mars, which started broadcasting in December 1960, 3 months later. And again, 3 months after that, Pathfinders to Venus, March 1961. So popular stuff and rattled out fairly quickly, Brian.
Yes, all four of these serials were entirely broadcast within 1960 and 1961. So it was really a quick turnaround for writing and producing these, and they always kept it so it would be not that long until the next serial was out there. So it certainly had a different feel in coming out with new programs then than what you have now or what you had even not all that much later.
Hello, my name's Louise Jensen, and I play the character Leela in Doctor Who, which is a British science fiction television series you may well have heard of. I'm here to welcome you to British Invaders, the podcast all about British science fiction television. Welcome.
So we should talk about the availability of these. Target Luna is missing, so we don't have anything to look at for that apart from the scripts and a handful of photographs. But the Pathfinder series were rather popular, and they were recorded onto film for sales to Europe and to North America as well. So that certainly helped in retaining things.
Although, interestingly, ITV themselves didn't retain a copy. And so for years and years, again, these series were thought to be completely lost. And it's only, I think, you know, through the fortune or the good graces of overseas broadcasters returning episodes over the years that we've managed to get it back. And so we've had, I think, the Canadian networks returning episodes, and even possibly Studio Canal from France returning one episode. There's a reference to that on the IMDb page. So it came back to ITV in bits and pieces over the years.
That's right. There was even one episode, Pathfinders to Venus, that didn't come back from any of the networks that had been distributed to. But ITV found that episode they actually had in their archive somewhere. So they did manage to complete all three of these serials, of the Pathfinder serials.
Yes, and it was quite big news, I think, when they finally found that last episode and managed to put the three serials together. And that meant we got a DVD release.
Yes, fairly recently. There was a network DVD release in October 2011 as a Region 2 DVD set on three discs.
That's right, and that's what we've been looking at. It includes quite a comprehensive production notes booklet written by the TV historian Andrew Pixley. As ever, we would point out that booklet does include lots of spoilers, so be careful how and when you read it. I think also you've got some photo galleries on the discs, and I gather the script for the original Target Luna series is on there as well, Brian.
Yes, the scripts for all six Target Luna episodes are on there as PDF files.
Okay, and that currently on Amazon.co.uk here is about £18, although you probably can pick it up cheaper on the marketplace. But that's available here in Region 2. And is on the Love Film Reserve list at the moment. You can reserve it for future rental, although it doesn't seem to be available at the moment, so you may be able to get hold of that by rent later on.
And there is no Region 1 release at this time, so if you're in North America, you will need to import this one from the UK.
Okay, shame. Left out again, Brian.
It happens. So I think that wraps up the first half of our discussion of the Pathfinder series. So next time, we will take a look at the two sequels, Pathfinders to Mars and Pathfinders to Venus.
That's right. We'll also try and compare the Pathfinder series with other programs from the same era. Plus, we've got to make our own reviews and recommendations for you about these serials, whether or not you should follow up the various Amazon links and buy yourself a copy.
Absolutely. There's plenty to talk about for this one. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. We also are a member of the Geek Culture Network of podcasts, so you can find us at thegeekculturenetwork.com. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, and we look forward to the pleasure of your company again next time. And until then, this is Eamon in England, signing off.